Today's program has been brought to you by Hearst Ranch, the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. For more information, visit HearstRanch.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
And welcome to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Alice Marcus Krieg, and Carmen's plugging herself in.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
All right. We're having some technical difficulties right now.
But we're
Hi.
Working it out.
All right. Welcome to We Dig Plants.
Heritage Radio
Heritage
Network.
Heritage Radio Network, where we bring the culture to horticulture. So let me begin the show by thanking all of our Facebook fans. We got close to 30 new Facebook fans.
I saw that.
Which was really great. In the past 2 weeks, that's because I begged you all last time. I said,
it's because
please.
I was on vacation.
I gave out bribes, Alice, while you were gone. I said, either you guys...
I'm no longer part of the company.
I sent them meat, and they decided. So it was really great. So we're coming to the close. We're coming close to the start of another gardening season. It's just a couple weeks away. And we're going to be out there doing all the work that we love, working with the talented and passionate gardeners that are part of our team. And one of the many things that we've sort of learned in the 20 years of making gardens, both public and private, is it is about the people that you work with every day that make the work worthwhile. And the people that you work for, you know. So it's physically demanding work. You're not going to get rich doing it. Why do people choose this profession?
I remember Tony Smith used to always say, our old boss used to always say, you got to want to get out of bed in the morning.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Our next guest makes
yes.
us want to get out of bed in the morning.
Yes. So Alice and I worked both in the public garden sphere and in the private. And they're very different worlds. So we thought we would open up the discussion to more than just our own experience and get input from two people that we think can bring a lot to the discussion. Our first guest, as Alice said, has worked with us now 4 seasons and is our amazing head gardener and knows a lot about the challenges and pleasures of building and maintaining gardens for New Yorkers. Allie Fox joins us in the studio today. Welcome, Allie.
Hey, thanks.
And she is a fox, I will say that.
Foxy. And representing the public garden side is Rhonda Brand, who works closely with Lyndon Miller, who's a preeminent public garden designer. She's been on the show as well recently.
Just a few weeks ago, yeah.
Yeah. She works with Lyndon on designing public spaces from New York to Richmond. She's joining us today via telephone from Oklahoma. Welcome, Rhonda.
Hi. Hi. Great to be here.
So let's start with you, Allie.
Okay.
We know your story, mm-hmm. but we want our listeners to kind of hear how you ended up working in the urban garden sphere.
Okay. Well...
Where were you born?
Well, I was born in Glamorous, Pennsylvania, which is actually a great place to be from and is a great place to be in plants.
Yeah, it's like the basket of horticulture.
Exactly. Yeah. But I came into urban gardening by way of my stomach. I started in agriculture because I really like to eat, and I felt that I should know how to grow the things that I was eating.
Uh-huh.
And so after I graduated from college... I went to college in Vermont, which also has a very strong
agriculture
yeah. and forestry. It's a beautiful place, really, really beautiful. And so anyway, I graduated from there, and I got a job working for the Chicago Botanic Gardens on an urban agriculture project. So I Sorry, something just flew into my face. So anyway, I started working in urban agriculture rather than horticulture. And I was in Chicago for 6 months. I loved it. The farm was in West Chicago. It was like a quarter acre plot. And we grew over 1,000 tons of food.
That's impressive.
Yeah, for such a small space. But we had a really great team, and we worked with 15 high school kids who were super dedicated and made it happen.
And high school kids, wow.
Yes, I know.
It's hard to get them to do anything.
They were into it. And it was a really, really cool experience. And then I moved to New York, and I couldn't find a way to do what I did in Chicago. And a friend of mine was doing private gardening, and I kind of followed suit. And that's how I got here. And it's been great.
Yeah, it was your friend Dan,
yes,
who was a gardener of ours, and
yes,
he was leaving to go back to Vermont,
right,
for his PhD program.
Yeah,
and said, like, you have to meet my friend Allie. I think she would be a great fit. And what, 4 years, 5 years,
mm-hmm,
you've been working for us,
yeah,
now? And Allie runs, let me just tell you a little bit about Allie's day with us in New York City very quickly. It starts off around 7:30, 8 o'clock. She emails all the gardeners, tells them where to be. Then she goes to our lot in Gowanus, which is not pretty, and loads up the van and then drives the van into the city and then deals with issues of parking and tickets and being at the right client's house at the right time.
And the super who's
and the
super.
And the super who's not super. And the schlepping of all of the plants, meeting our trucker, unloading a truck, hauling plants up, you know, 8-15 flights, it depends on the site that day.
Mm-hmm.
And then overseeing the crew so that the work gets done in a orderly manner, which is a clean manner.
Really important, mm-hmm, too.
And then she has to undo everything that she's just done and load the truck back up, drive back to Brooklyn, unload, pack up, get ready for the next day. So it's long, long hours.
Yeah, it doesn't always feel like it, though.
Well, that's because of your demeanor, which is amazing.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, let's get Rhonda in the mix too. Rhonda, you work mostly in the public garden sphere, and you've had quite a bit of training as a designer. What inspired you to choose the public versus the private segment of the business?
Well, you know, I had quite a different path from Allie's into gardening and horticulture. I had been working for decades in art management. I had a lot of interesting jobs, but I really wanted a career change at a certain point. And I had been interested in gardening through having my own garden at my home. So I started taking some classes in design at the Landscape Institute at Harvard, and I loved the design classes. But I quickly realized that my body experience in my home garden wasn't going to be sufficient to really understand plants and horticulture and to design gardens and landscapes. So I applied to the New York Botanical Garden School of Professional Horticulture, which is a really intense 2-year program in horticulture.
Yeah,
I got in. I had been living in Boston at the time. I quit my job. I moved to New York, and I enrolled in the program. I graduated a couple of years later, and part of that experience was an internship with Lyndon Miller. And, you know, what better way to learn about public gardening and horticulture than to work with Lyndon Miller? So that was an incredible experience. But I had been interested in public horticulture even before meeting Lyndon, and when I lived in Boston. I had a real affinity for it, and I was very interested in how people in urban environments interact with nature and react to landscapes. And so even before I had read Olmsted or Lyndon Miller on this subject, you know, and many other people who write eloquently about the value of public horticulture in urban life, I was really interested in that interaction.
Well, Lyndon has been an incredible influence on how people think about public parks and gardens, and what people expect from their public outdoor spaces. She's changed, I think, a lot of people's minds about what we deserve and what we should have. How do you think public garden design has changed since you began your career?
Well, you know, I think that in the last several years, there's been a real interest in greening our cities, you know, the green movement, and a huge interest in urban agriculture. So that's been kind of a recent change that we've seen. So on one hand, I think people are even more aware of the green spaces or the lack of green spaces in their neighborhood. But on the other hand, I think recently we've seen that, you know, financially, the park system has been hard hit, and the lack of money for maintenance, and sometimes, you know, the lack of general understanding of the importance of maintenance. And I think that's something that really in the last several years, I've seen that go downhill, even to the, in the sense that acknowledging that we need skilled people who can do the maintenance in our parks. So
oh, bless you for saying that, Rhonda.
You know, the creation of these parks and these beautiful, amazing spaces that should be as beautiful as what we can have in our, you know, private homes, but then really having the commitment to maintain those beyond that, you know, that still is really a suffering area of public horticulture, I think.
I agree, and I'm really glad that you mentioned having skilled people, because Allie here does it every day, you know, for on the private side. I want Allie to talk a little bit about, like what you were saying, Rhonda. The scale that you work at your private residence for your own home is so different from working professionally and in the public sphere. Allie, can you talk a little bit about what does it take to do this work? What should people think about before they consider this profession?
Well, something that transfers, I think, both public and private is that you really have to want to do it. Like, it's not something you can half-ass because you are constantly keeping an eye on things, noticing how things changes. Like, plants are so sensitive. At the same time, they can also be super durable, but, you know, you have to be on top of it. You have to like to get dirty. Gardening is not
glamorous.
No, it's not. I mean, I think people often have this like really cute idea of like gardeners in sun hats and like wearing their little aprons. And
yes, some people, Crocs and
right. And of course, some people do that, but on a larger scale, it is dirty work, but I love that. I like using my hands. You have to like to use your hands. You have to like the elements. You're going to be out in the sun. You're going to be in the rain. You're going to be seeing how those things affect what you're working with at all times.
Yeah.
You have to be flexible because plants react to everything. So you have to be able to fix a situation at any time. I mean, I know it's not rocket science. I don't mean to make it sound like that, but you do have to be willing to get into weird situations with plants.
And I think you have to be patient.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because a garden is
that.
A process.
Absolutely. You know, plants go through processes. They have seasonal lifespans. They have life cycles. You know, some plants are biannual. Plants are so cool because they are all so different, and you have to be able to take the time to appreciate that, to appreciate what you do.
Mm-hmm. And you have to let go, I think, a little bit of control.
Yeah.
You know, because Mother Nature's in charge. Wouldn't you agree, Rhonda? If it's not for those who want to control everything.
right, absolutely.
There's a lot of things that are out of our hands. Well, we have to take a little bit of a break. We're reaching about the half point mark, right? We'll be right back. Listen to We Dig Plants.
I don't go in for understanding when you are away. Can't use my heart to think.
You're listening to Josephine by The Hollows on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I will relate you and tie your finger right on up to mine. Sweet Josephine, you live in my dream. Sleep right by my side. I bid you well forever, my belle. You'll always be my bride. Patience is a virtue that I practice all the time. I can't prepare my heart for joy sublime. In my room I will attend you, and my heart it will defend you. Broken records keeping perfect time. Sweet Josephine, you live in my dream. Sleep right by my side. I bid you well forever, my belle. You'll always be my bride.
consolation, never second best. I'll practice till I get you right, my dear. So know that I will love you, and my heart sings high above you. Takes away the doubt I have of fear. Sweet Josephine, you live in my dream.
Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef. Pasture raised on 150,000 acres in Central California. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, free-range, sustainably produced, humane. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, the authentic flavor of the American West.
Hi, welcome back to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. Today we're talking about the gardening life in the urban setting with Allie Fox, our amazing head gardener. And Rhonda Brand calling in from Oklahoma, who works with Lyndon Miller, creating and building amazing landscapes in the public sphere. So, Rhonda, let's talk a little bit about the challenges that you see in your work when you're designing or rebuilding a public garden. What do you ever meet with strong public opposition or, you know, resistance?
Well, I haven't met with strong public opposition to the general idea of creating the gardens in these public spaces, but people in their neighborhoods are very protective of their green space, and I think that's a wonderful thing because it shows that they have a sense of ownership of it. But in that sense, I think you have to try to really communicate well what you're going to do in a public space, because otherwise, you know, people might feel like chaining themselves to their favorite, you know, shrub or tree because they don't want to see any changes made in that space. And so it's important to bring the neighborhood along with you and really communicate with them about what the vision is for that space and how it's really being done for them. And I think that if people can, you know, get the sense that this project is being done so that they have a beautiful space to come to and to enjoy, and that their needs are being heard and that they're listened to as part of the process, then I think that goes a long way to mitigating that kind of opposition. But, you know, when you asked me about challenges, I was thinking we were talking about patience before,
patience
with plants and gardening. But in the public sphere, one difference there is that you do have to create immediate impact in these spaces because, you know, particularly in New York, not only are neighbors, people in the neighborhood using those spaces all the time, but you have tourists coming through as well. And you can't plant really far apart, tiny little plants, and expect, oh, in 3 or 5 years, that's going to look great. Come back, you know, come back from your, you know, from Europe and see this again in 3 or 5 years. You really have to, you know, it needs to look good the day you put it in. And so in that sense, you want to practice really good horticulture, but you have to kind of balance that with a sense of show and display. And that can be hard because, you know, gardeners who are really well-trained horticulturists, they want to take care of those plants in a specific manner, and you know I want to too. But we also have to balance that out with a kind of a certain show and immediate impact in those spaces. So that's a bit of a challenge in public horticulture.
Yeah, and you know it is a challenge sometimes in private horticulture too.
Definitely.
Because some clients they don't understand. You know, I try to give them the old line. You know, first year sleep, second year creep, third year leap, but they're not buying it. They're like,
that's true.
They're like this pot of dirt is going to be what?
Yeah.
You know,
I want it to look like Hollywood now.
I think two of the gardens that I can think of now I saw them when they were recently installed was Washington Square Park, which I thought looked immediately beautiful.
Yeah.
And another example I thought that was great, Alice and I were just talking about it earlier today, was the Highline.
Yeah.
Pretty much as soon as it got installed, it looked amazing. And it brought, you know, and it was a challenge because the kinds of plants that they were using there weren't necessarily the kinds of things that people were used to seeing in public places, you know?
Right.
So they did it. I thought they did a good job of balancing good horticulture, I think, with the immediate impact that's necessary.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I think that's true, too. And, you know, when you have that many people in these public spaces, obviously people present a challenge, and yet they're the very reason you're creating these spaces. So, you know, this is sort of that balancing act between those things. You just got the sheer numbers of people that you have to deal with. And in that way, I think the design of the hardscape is really important because a lot of times one of the challenges that I face is I go into a public space that has already been, the hardscape's already designed, it's there, and you can't change it.
That's hard,
I
know.
It may not be designed in a way that is really conducive to growing the kinds of plants that people want to grow there, whether, for example, you know, raising beds to help keep the dogs out of the beds, and, you know, there's just so many things you can do with hardscape to try to make a better environment for plant life in a public arena.
So give us an example, Rhonda, of one of the biggest challenges you've had in keeping a garden looking good after it was installed. What kind of challenge did you have afterwards to get everybody on board to care for it?
Well, you know, one example comes to mind, and I don't actually want to name the garden because we're in the midst of the challenge right now.
That's fine.
I know we share this challenge with so many other public spaces, is that the rat problem in New York, that can be tough in our public parks. You know, and I know that people work so hard to do things to combat that, but that really can present a big obstacle to keeping the plants alive and to being able to work in this space. But people need to be able to use their parks and eat in their parks, and in that sense, we have to have plenty of garbage cans and regular garbage pickup, and you know, think about where the benches are and where those garbage cans are in relation to them. There are a lot of things that don't have to do with plants that designers need to think about in those spaces to be sure that it can be really utilized by large numbers of people every day.
Yeah, and some of the parks, I mean, it probably a place like Bryant Park and the Highland, they probably annualized go into the millions, right, in terms of usage.
Right, right.
So, well, let's talk a little bit about, I'll have Allie go first, about training, because you touched on this, Rhonda, a little bit, having skilled people, right? There's a lot of different ways to learn how to deal with plants. Formal, you know, training, horticultural degrees versus on-the-job training. Allie, from your experience, what do you think is gained from each experience?
When I started gardening, I was learning as I went, and then I reinforced that with formal training. I got certified in horticulture through the Brooklyn Botanic Gardens, and I think both of them are extremely valuable. I think, you know, books are so great. They are references. You can always have them in a pinch to look up. But I think that anything that... I think hands-on really reinforces all of that. That's what nails it in. You know, you can learn things, you can read things, but it's not going to really become ingrained until you apply it. However, right. I would like to note that... Can I just talk about a little pet peeve of mine, though?
Yes.
In terms of the formal training?
Go on.
Is when someone, you know, with, I think, good intentions, reads something about plants or comes across something on the internet, an article or something, and then they think that that is infallible. And that's where I think that the hands-on training is super important, because, yes, that might be a great idea in theory, and that, you know, it's not going to be true until you practice it. And I think that... to become the best gardener that you can be, you do need both.
I couldn't agree more. Rhonda, what's your take on it? You've had a lot of formal training, and you've also obviously been in the field a lot. What's your take on the formal versus the on-the-job kind of experiences?
Well, I definitely agree with Allie that both of them are really important. I mean, one really can't replace the other. But I do think that it's important to know what you don't know. You know, for me, the formal training enabled me to make a big career change, so that was wonderful. But, you know, you might be better at horticulture or better at design or better at gardening or better at hardscape planning, and whatever aspect of it that you don't know would be an area that either you need to get formal training in or get on-the-job experience in. You know, either of those can work in that circumstance. Or perhaps partner with someone who has those skills that you don't have. And I think that that's the most important thing about the training, because if you look at a lot of the landscape design and landscape architecture programs, they tend not to have very much horticulture training in them. I would love to see that change over time. I think it would be great if those programs had a more robust horticulture component, but you know, you can only fit so much into these individual programs, and so I think it's, you know, balancing out the different aspects of where your skills lie and where you might need to get some additional training.
I love the way that you started that answer off, Rhonda, in saying you don't know everything. Like, and that's what...
And know what you don't know.
And know what you don't know.
That's really important.
I think that's... And I think just as a trait, no one can know everything. You know what I mean? And everybody can...
Right.
The thing is, in some of the other professions, you know, people build themselves up as being experts. And I think in horticulture, because it's nature, you can't really ever be an expert.
Right.
Because there's always going to be some indescribable situation that happens because of Mother Nature.
I mean, look at what happened last year. The boxwood blight.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. And
the citrus situation.
And the impatience. An entire massive crop has basically been wiped out by a disease that no one knows how to treat at this point. And it's kind of an opportunity in a way, an opportunity to think about using something that isn't so water intensive, that isn't so monoculture like. So, you know, we get thrown these curveballs that I think challenge us. And I think,
and it's idiosyncratic, like, you know, and look at the citrus situation, the bug, you know, the pest situation. And now the, you know, it's affecting the world economy of orange juice now.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, just when you think you know something, it changes. And it's kind of interesting. We're always challenged, you know, every day.
Can I also interject? I'm sorry. I was just going to say.
That reminds me of one of the best places to get additional knowledge and training is really from our fellow horticulturists and gardeners. Because that's where I have learned so much, and I continue to learn all the time. This great community of gardeners that we have in the New York City area and in many other areas too. What a wonderful way to continue to learn.
And the nursery, you know, the nurseries,
the nursery people are underutilized, I think, as a resource.
Yeah.
Allie, did you want to add something?
Yeah, I was just going to say what we're talking about right now is one of the reasons that I really love doing this professionally is that you're constantly learning. That's something that you have to want to do. You have to be open to that.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I just think that's great. Mm-hmm. I think that's great that whether or not you're actively seeking new knowledge, you're constantly taking it in. And I just, it's great.
Yeah, you do have to be open to learning. We're coming to the end. I want to end the show on a kind of a little bit sentimental note because that's kind of how I am.
big softy.
I'm a softy. I want to ask each of you to sort of share an experience in the field or on the job that sort of changed you or made you grow as a gardener and perhaps even as a person. Allie, why don't you go first?
This is an experience that I didn't have either on the job or in the field. This is something that happened one time when I was traveling. I studied abroad in Japan, and I spent a lot of time walking around the city, and they have amazing gardens sprinkled throughout the city. And that was like the first time that I really experienced the feeling of sanctuary and realizing that plants are something that can create that. And so, you know, oftentimes when we will make gardens on rooftops and terraces and little side pockets of New York City, I get to experience that again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that, you know, that's my sentimental note, is that I get to re-experience that feeling all
that's
the time.
That's lovely.
That's a really... And who better than to learn from the Japanese, right?
Right.
So, Rhonda, tell us, if you don't mind, sharing a personal anecdote of yours.
Sure. I'm thinking of when I did my internship at the Conservatory Garden. I did part of my internship with Lyndon, and I also worked as a gardener at the Conservatory Garden for a short time with Diane Schaub. And working in that garden, you're stopped constantly by people who are thanking you. I would be, you know, planting, and people would walk by and thank me all the time, all day long, for what I was doing. And it was really an amazing experience to me because I thought, wow, you know, this, I'm doing this for those people, and I can feel that every day. I can see their appreciation and their love of nature, and it's so inspiring. So I think I look back at that during my internship experience, and it reminds me all the time of why I'm doing this and how people really, really appreciate and love these public spaces so much.
Yeah.
Well, that's a really great note to end on. Unfortunately, we've run out of time. Rhonda, thank you so much for joining us remotely from Oklahoma and taking the time out.
Thank you for having me. It's been such fun.
Great. Good. And yeah. Allie, thanks for coming in.
Hey, guys, thank you. This is great.
On your day off. You've been listening to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. This show will be available for listening via archive at heritageradionetwork.org and also via podcast on iTunes. Please visit our Facebook fan page, Groundworks Inc., We Dig Plants, for information on upcoming shows, special events, and horticultural news. Thank you to Jack Inslee for producing and to Joji for engineering our show. See you in the garden.
Happy gardening.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.